Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, name 727, Avyakta. Avyakta means unmanifest. Vyakta means manifest, Avyakta means unmanifest. This is another favorite of the Mayavadis, who always want to deny the reality of the personality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that his ultimate feature is not impersonal, effulgence, all-pervading. That's not the ultimate way to understand. The ultimate way to understand him is as the Supreme Person manifest in the heart of his devotees and manifest in the world and manifest as Shyamasundara. Yeah. Very good. Very good lizard. Already the name has been given Vyakta Rupa. His form in Vishnu Sahasranam, way back, 305. His form is manifest. But these rascals, they want to say, well, his form is manifest, but his ultimate reality is unmanifest. Just not manifest to you, you rascal. They're denying the reality of the personality of Godhead. I have a form. In my body, I have a form. I eat, but when he eats, and then the devotees offer to the idol in the temple, they will say, but the idol doesn't actually eat, it's just some imagination. They just want to make all of bhakti into imagination, and that's all. That there's no actual person as Krishna, or even if there is this whole manifestation, there is Krishna, but ultimately everything's all imagination. It's just the stupid ideas in your head are all imagination. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the verdict of all Shastras. I'll come back to that later. Manifest, what does it mean? Manifest means that which is seen, grasped, understood. If you can't see, someone may be a blind man, but their sense of touch is very acute. By the workings of Krishna's nature, their other senses become more acute. Their sense of hearing becomes very acute. Their sense of smell becomes very acute. So that even without seeing, they can interact with the world. So, manifest, it implies there's a seer and a seen. But the Mayavadis want to say that Avyakta, there's ultimately the seer, the seen, and the act of seeing, they all merge into one, which is impossible. If there's seeing, there has to be an object of vision and something to be seen. But with their imagination that ultimately there is nothing to be seen, Esha Drashta, the Shastra talks about the seer. They've imagined very nasty idea also. Anyway, I'll just I'll just get on with come to the point that because he is not seen by our sense organs, the mundane sense organs, therefore he may be called avyakta, not manifest. Even to the transcendental intelligence of a perfectly pure devotee, he's also bewildering, because that is his nature. And the example Baladev Vidyabhushan gives is that of Narada Muni. Such a great devotee had full access to go and see Krishna in all his palaces in Dwaraka, and he saw that Krishna is doing various things in various palaces. Chitrang batayetad ekena vapusha yogapat pritak griheshu dvyashta sahasrang striya eka udabahat. Narad said, it's astonishing. He's the same one person, but he has manifested himself in 16,000 forms, having married 16,000 women. And in every residence, he's living separately. Although he is chitram, it's wonderful, amazing. Ekena vapusha, he's one person, one form, but yugapat pritak, he's simultaneously different. So Krishna, he's not manifest in all his, he can't be seen or understood by materialists, but even his great pure devotees cannot fully understand his glories. Therefore, avyakta. Parashara Bhatta quotes from Gita. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavritaha mudho yang na bhijanati lokoma majamavyayam. Krishna says, I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent, the mudhas, people who think they're very intelligent by studying so many shastras and coming up. Actually, in one sense, they are very intelligent. It takes quite a lot of intelligence to dream up such complex theories to try to establish, and is very convincing to many people, something untrue as being true. The Mayavadi ideas, well, in one sense, yeah, you can say they're true, but only to a limited extent. If they think this is the ultimate understanding, that the Supreme is impersonal and that we all become sannyasis by renouncing the world, what happens? Danda grahena matrena narayana bhavet. This is the idea of the Mayavadi sannyasis. You accept a danda, you a single stick to show one. But still it's one stick. It's different from other sticks, isn't it? Something wrong in our philosophy there. Yeah, but they like to show, yeah, by accepting a stick, a man becomes God. Naro Narayana Bhavet. Now wait a minute. Narayana is lying on a couch in the causal ocean in a massive form, and from his body all the universes are manifest. You're not doing that. You can imagine. It's only imagination, children imagining. But they're not children. They're fully cognizant, at least as cognizant as a human being can be. They're just envious. So Krishna doesn't manifest himself to them. He's covered by his curtain of illusion. And so most of the people in the world, they don't know him. They cannot recognize him. Again from Gita, Parashara Bhatta quotes, Naham vedaya na tapasana dhanena na chejaya shakyameva vidho drashtam. Drishtavana simam yata. Krishna says to Arjuna, having shown the universal form to Arjuna, having shown his 400 form, then again he shows his 200 form. And then he says, this form, you're thinking that form, you're thinking that universal form is something very special. You're thinking this 400 form is something very special, but this 200 form, Krishna, not simply by studying the Vedas, not by performing many austerities, not by performing many pious activities such as giving charity to worthy persons, nor by performing many sacrifices, can one see me in the way you are seeing me, Arjuna. Now, Krishna was visible to even so many people present there, such as Duryodhana, who also saw Krishna. So why does Krishna say that? Arjuna sees Krishna. How do we see? We see not only with our eyes, but we interpret everything we see. So when Arjuna, or we have a worldview, we find elsewhere in Gita, Krishna says that everyone, well, this is my understanding of it, that Krishna says that everyone, Shraddhamayo Yang Purusha, everyone has a kind of faith. So my understanding of this is, one way we can see this is that, well, yeah, everyone lives on faith. Everyone has a certain way of seeing the world, a worldview. We don't just see, we see with a certain kind of worldview. So when for instance, if India and Pakistan are playing a cricket match, this example will be understandable to most Indians. When India and Pakistan are playing a cricket match, I don't think they do. I don't think they do anymore for undiplomatic or political reasons. They haven't done for some time. Anyway, when the Pakistani players, when the Pakistani fans see their leading batsman, or their most prominent batsman, they see, yeah, great, we won him. We think of him favorably. And from the Indians, they think, he's the one who's going to do it, he's going to save us. A very positive way of thinking. From the Indian side, oh, he's like, at least in the context of cricket, he's our enemy. So they have a different way of looking. They see the same person, they may be there present at the ground, watching, but people see differently according to their perspective. Another example given is that the child of the mother and the husband of the same woman, the father, hoping the husband is the father, they see the breasts of that woman in a different way. The husband sees the breast as something as his sexually enjoyable object. And the child sees the breast as for taking milk from and taking affection from. So it's the same thing, but it's seen a different way. So Krishna, he may be seen, even if he's seen in one sense by Duryodhana and company, he's not seen in the same way that he's seen by Arjuna. Arjuna can understand, this is my worshipable Lord. Actually, he's worshipable Lord for everyone. And that's the message of the Gita. But not everyone can see him like that. Because they're mudha. Yes, mudha. Rascal, fools. Yeah, committed fools. Now, avyakta. He's not manifest to everyone. Quite commonly, atheists say, as if in challenge to say, show me God. Show me God. As if this is, by these three words, they can demonstrate the puerility, the foolishness of generations of theism, that the idea, just by these three words, show me God, they can show me God, said in a sarcastic way, being quite confident that the theist will not be able to show them God. So for them, this is proof. You can't show me, therefore God doesn't exist. Yes, it's just nonsense. I would say no. So you believe in science. Show me subatomic particles. Can you show me subatomic particles? No. Can you prove they exist? Well, can you prove they exist? Yes. Okay, prove they exist. I'm sitting. You're taking the side of the scientist. I'm a layman. Prove they exist. Well, you have to go through years of study to understand. And even then, you can only understand by inference. Oh, really? And then, but then if you say, show me God, if I don't show you, you say, no God. I say, show me subatomic particles. I can show you, but you have to take the training. You have to have faith in the whole endeavor of science to even undertake such training, to begin to understand all these things. You have to start off by beginning. Where does it begin? You see a mathematics. Okay, we're going to study subatomic particles, physics. We're definitely going to need a lot of advanced mathematics. Mathematics means numbers. Where does mathematics begin? Mathematics begins with the faith that when you see a symbol 1 or a symbol 2, that is competent to represent the concept of one object or two objects. Actually, if you say two times 2 equals 4, the first two and the second two don't mean they're not the same. They're similar but not the same. Just like if you say 2 times 2 oranges makes 4 oranges. Okay, 2 times 2 equals 4. Okay, but when you say 2 times 2 and you apply it to a practical situation, 2 oranges multiplied by 2. So the first 2 stands for 2 oranges, and the second 2 stands for something intangible, 2 groups. And then that gets applied to, so they both stand for 2, but they're 2 different types of 2. I don't know if even most scientists even think about such things. It's very basic, you could say, philosophy of science or philosophy of mathematics. But anyway, you have faith. I remember at school, learning by rote. 2 times 2 equals 4. 2 times 3 equals 6. 2 times 4 equals 8. 2 times 5 equals 17. Ah, wait a minute, that's not right. Anyway, learning by rote. We didn't know what it meant. It's just something you had to learn. It's a good thing we learned. It's very helpful in life, especially in this modern world. But even in the ancient world, it's helpful. Anyway, what's the point I'm making? The point I'm getting at here is that to understand matter, what to speak of that which is transcendental to matter, what to speak of God, who is transcendental to that which is transcendental to matter. In other words, unmanifest. We have to go through a long process. We can't immediately understand. Even how many people understand quantum physics, astrophysics? It's a long process to understand. Now, subatomic particles, they're unmanifest, right? They're unmanifest. So if we're to understand God, then who's unmanifest? It means you can't understand just by primary mathematics or by such a simple form. Show me. Okay, I get a pen. Show me a pen. I have a pen. Here's a pen. Okay, all right, I believe you. Here's a pen. And not such a simple thing. You may say, well, you see, this is science, and it can be proved, and so many scientists believe it's a... Well, we say, this is theism, theistic science. It can be proved, but you say, no, you say we have all these experiments and this and there's no experiment. No, we have our experiments also, but you can't expect to have the same methodology. Like the methodology in science, for trying to locate subterranean deposits of oil is not the same as the methodology for trying to locate galaxies in outer space. A different methodology. Some basic training is required for, you'll definitely have to know two times two equals four, and a lot more mathematics for either discipline. Either you're in, so what would that be, oil geology, soil geology, or astronomy, and so, or even to use the kind of equipment that is required in these disciplines requires considerable training. But it's a different methodology. So similarly, in the science of understanding God, who is the sum, just like the, how are you going to find the oil? It's unmanifest. You have a basic idea, it's probably there, but it's not manifest. Then how do you discover it? You have to go through a methodology. It's not manifest at the present time. But then if you're an expert and building on the knowledge that others have discovered and imparted, you yourself can learn, and then you can use the technology to make that which is unmanifest, the oil within the earth, make it manifest and usable by human society. So similarly, there's a methodology. It's a different methodology. There is, in every field of science, there are assumptions and axioms which are accepted. You can't do science without accepting some axioms, assumptions. For advanced mathematical theories used in astrophysics, you may not have gone through all the, because the physicist is not a mathematician per se, but the mathematicians, they will go through all the elaborate proofs to show that certain theorems are applicable, and then they can be used in other fields also. But it's not just like using a computer. You don't have to know how it works to use it. So in complex fields of science, either you go to subatomic physics or astrophysics, micro or macro world, then there you don't seek out the proofs of all the mathematical systems that you use. You use them. Any scientist, however lauded and laudable he may be, and however expert he may be in a certain field, can only know a tiny, 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 tiny bit of the whole megalith of that is what is called science. So in the Vedic culture, there's an important saying, vidyadadati vinayam. Knowledge, learning, gives rise to humility. A little humility would be in order. Mr. Dawkins, Professor Dawkins, a little humility would be in order. I'm calling people rascals, this and that. Well, they lack the basic humility to, they make such pronouncements. There is no God. Show me God. You can't show me God. That shows there's no God. And it's just like sometimes you have to chastise a child and try and put them in order. Or at least to point out to other children that you don't be like that. Don't be puffed up. That's, Srila Prabhupada often used to use that term, puffed up. It actually comes from the Bible, people who have some knowledge, from the English translation of the Bible. The people who have some knowledge, what they think is knowledge, they become puffed up with that. Yeah, unnecessarily proud. So this this verse is from Gita, very important to understand why God is not manifest, avyakta, and that he exists, certainly exists, but he's not manifest to us. This verse, nahaṁ prakāśa sarvasya yoga māyā samāvṛtaḥ mūḍho yaṁ nābhijānāti loko mām ajamavyayam. The translation that Srila Prabhupada gives for this, I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and inexhaustible. Now I'm going to read most of the purport that Srila Prabhupada gave to this verse, particularly as is relevant to a discussion of this name, avyakta. It's a name. It's a name for Krishna. That means there's a name. It's a name of Vishnu. You just can't paint him into non-existence, or just like you see some flowers, the dandelion in the wind, some gust of wind, and they just poof, all the little flowers float away. You just can't render him as unmanifest in all respects just by imagining it. Actually, the very term unmanifest means that he has manifestation, that he has existence, just we don't see it, that's all. So Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse from Gita. It may be argued that since Krishna was visible to everyone when he was present on this earth, how can it be said that he is not manifest to everyone? But actually he was not manifest to everyone. Yeah, everyone was able to see him, but he wasn't manifest to everyone. So Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain. When Krishna was present, there were only a few people who could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the assembly of Kurus, when Shishupal spoke against Krishna as being elected president of the assembly, Bhishma supported him and proclaimed him to be the Supreme God. Bhishma supported Krishna, not Shishupal. If you read it, you can see the capital H, but if you hear it, you might get confused. Similarly, the Pandavas and a few others knew that he was the Supreme, but not everyone. Not everyone knew that he was Supreme. He was not revealed to the non-devotees and the common man. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that but for his pure devotees, all men consider him to be like themselves. He was manifest only to his devotees as the reservoir of all pleasure. But to others, to unintelligent non-devotees, he was covered by his internal potency. So what was happening, people saw him, but they saw him śraddhāmayo yaṁ purusha, yo yat śraddhā sa eva sa. One is in dehināṁ sa svabhāvasa. Everyone has, in the conditioned bodily existence, we identify ourselves according to the kind of worldview we have. And so Duryodhana and others, they saw Krishna, they didn't really know what to make of him, because it said he was raised as a Vaishya. And then he came home, he was like a vagabond child, and then he went to school very late and didn't, and then they threw him out of school just after a few days. Him and his brother, they must have been really delinquent children, because he went at a very late age, but it seems he couldn't adjust to the school because he got sent back just after a short time. And now he calls himself the Prince of Dwarka, and he goes around killing his own relatives. And they had a very bad opinion of him based on their adhakshata, how they saw him in relation to their view of how the world is and their role within it. But they don't know that he is adhokshaja. They saw him through their mundane vision, but he is beyond mundane vision. And there are many such statements in Shastra in this regard. Continuing the purport of Srila Prabhupada, in the prayers of Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that the Lord is covered by the curtain of yoga maya, and thus ordinary people cannot understand him. Now, Srila Prabhupada doesn't quote this Sanskrit, but I shall do so from this statement of Kunti Devi, who is no less than Bhishma Dev. Kunti Vacha. Namaste purusham tvadyam ishvaram prakritih param alaksham sarva bhutanam antar bahiravastitam. Kunti, praise to Krishna, offering respects. You are the original person beyond the material nature, superior to the material nature. In this way, he's unmanifest. We are in the material nature. He is beyond the material nature. We are stuck in a little well, just like a frog in a well. His concept of reality is limited to his position at the bottom of a well. He has no idea of the whole big world outside. Plato's cave, another example. Then Krishna is not seen by all living beings, although he is within and without them. He exists within them and without them. But he's avyakta, not manifest. Then she explains this more, Kunti Devi. Maya javanika chandam agyad hokshajam avyayam nalaksha se murha drusha nato natyadharo yatha. She gives the example that Krishna is covered by just like a curtain of maya, like a curtain on a stage. When the curtain is closed, you can't see what's behind it. But then even when the curtain is opened and you can see the actors, you don't really see who they are because they're playing a role. So in the same way, Krishna, even when he appears in this world, most people can't see who he is as the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he's playing as if he were an ordinary person. So foolish people, they can't understand that Krishna is that personality beyond mundane vision. He's not like them, he's not like us in some limited body. His, which dies, Krishna's form never dies. So, getting back to Srila Prabhupada's purport, to this verse from Gita, this yoga maya curtain is also confirmed in the Isho Parnishad, in which the devotee prays, Hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukham tattvam pushanna pavrnu satya dharmaya drishtaye. O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest religious principle. Therefore, I pray that you will also maintain me. Your transcendental form is covered by the yoga maya. The Brahma Jyoti is the covering of the internal potency. May you kindly remove this glowing effulgence that impedes my seeing your Satchidananda Vigraha, your eternal form of bliss and knowledge. Srila Prabhupada continues the purport, having quoted from the Isho Upanishad, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his transcendental form of bliss and knowledge is covered by the internal potency of the Brahma Jyoti and the less intelligent impersonalists cannot see the Supreme on this account. So this verse refers to everyone who cannot see Krishna as he is, even if they see him, and in particular to the impersonalists who are searching for the Absolute Truth, but don't want to find Krishna, who is the Absolute Truth. Isn't that strange? Very strange. The impersonalism messes you up. People are really afraid of this vaccination. They're going to get a vaccination. And oh, it's going to really mess me up. Impersonalism is going to mess you up much worse. Better take a vaccine and chant Hare Krishna than be an unvaccinated impersonalist. All right, now I'm going to quote, very much relevant in this regard, from Sri Yamunacharya's Stotra Ratnam. Two verses which are quoted in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's verses from the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, quoted in the topmost Shastra of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Now, I don't know why, I could ask, I suppose, someone might be able to provide an answer. Why in the Sri Vaishnava commentaries on Vishnu Sahasranam, they don't quote the Stotra Ratnam? Maybe because they don't consider it canonical in the same sense that the Shastras that they do quote, largely the Divya Prabandham, Vishnu Purana, Vedas, they quote. That's probably the reason. They don't think it's canonical. They accept Divya Prabandham as canonical. All right, but of course the writings of Yamuna Acharya and the great Acharyas, they are not different from Shastra in the sense that they're fully in accord with Shastra, and they may express in various ways the same teachings as the Shastra. And this is very much true of the two verses which I'll quote now from Sri Yamunacharya, who's accepted, of course, by all Sri Vaishnavas, regardless of which sect they belong to. So here's a verse by Yamunacharya, praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Twam Shila, yes, Twam Shila Rupa Charitai Parama Prakrashtai Satvena Satvikataya Prabhalaischa Shastrai Prakhyata Daiva Paramartha Vidam Mataischa Naivasura Prakrataya Prabhavanti Bodham. My Lord, those influenced by demoniac principles cannot realize you, although you are clearly the Supreme by dint of your exalted activities, forms, character, and uncommon power, which are confirmed by all the revealed scriptures in the quality of goodness and the celebrated transcendentalists in the divine nature. In other words, Krishna is obviously the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything about him very clearly declares that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By his activities, his forms, his personality, his amazing power, his, all the Shastras, the Shastras for persons in the mode of goodness, they all confirm this. And all the great transcendentalists, they also do. Then why do people not understand? They're demons, that's all. That's all. Simple answer. Show me God. No. Even if you see, what will you do? You'll mock him. Better we don't show you. We won't show you God. Rascal. You can see him everywhere, but even if he was to come and personally, you think he has to come before you and bow down? I'm God, please believe in me. No. Please. Okay. Oh, that's not the way to approach him. Imagine you, I don't believe the Queen of England exists. Well, she lives in Buckingham Palace in London, and a lot of people see her. I didn't see her. It's all a big bluff. Show me. Tell her to come and bow down in front of me right now. Then I'll believe she exists. And even if she comes, you say, you see, it's just someone dressed up. You're just trying to fool me. I know better. What can you do for such people? So that was verse 12 from Yamunacharya Stotaratna. Then verse 13, continuing the same theme, Ulanghita Trividhasima Samatishai Sambhavanam Tava Parivradhima Svabhavam Maya Balena Bhavatapi Niguhyamanam Pashyanti Kechidanishang Tvadananya Bhavaihi. O my Lord, everything within material nature is limited by time, space, and thought. Three limits. We're limited by time, just like this body is limited. It's born at a certain time, will die at a certain time. It's limited by space. This body is now present in its present location. In India, it is not in Britain. So it's limited by space and by thought. It's like the ant may be crawling on my body, but because the ant's thought processes are not sufficient to understand what is a human being. So because of that limit, he can't understand who am I? Who am I? I'm pointing to this body is not me. I should know who am I. Now, in the same way, the Supreme Personality of God, he's beyond all those limits. He's present in all times, all places, all circumstances. All thoughts spring from him and are meant to lead to him. So we put the limit on ourselves by not being able to see him, by our being inimical to him. He closes off the thought process by which we can understand him. Anyway, going back to the translation of this verse, O my Lord, everything within material nature is limited by time, space, and thought. Your characteristics, however, being unequaled and unsurpassed, are always transcendental to such limitations. Krishna is beyond the limitations of this material world. You sometimes cover such characteristics by your own energy, but nevertheless, your unalloyed devotees are always able to see you under all circumstances. So the important point here is that Krishna is unmanifest to the non-devotees, but he is manifest to the devotees. Another example of something which is unmanifest, which we can, if we know the technique, we can bring into manifestation. Ghee is present in milk, but where is it? You can't see it. There is a process to bring it out. This is a crude example. Those who know the process can extract ghee from milk. When you extract ghee from milk, you're not creating something. You're just manifesting it. So in the same way, if we know the process, we can manifest in our minds the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his mercy. It's not that he wasn't there, but wasn't manifest. Within a caterpillar is an unmanifest butterfly. A butterfly is very different from a caterpillar. A frog is very different from a tadpole. Who would imagine that from a tadpole comes a frog? who would imagine that from maggots, larvae, come flies. There are many wonders, even within the material world. What to speak of the source of all wonders? So this name, Avyakta, should be properly understood. There's quite a bit more to say about this. I'll postpone saying more to another session, if Krishna is so kind to let me manifest more discussion of how he is manifest, although his one name is Avyakta, unmanifest, if Krishna kindly allows me, I will continue to speak on this topic in another session. Bancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya devacha patita nam pavane bhyo vaishnavibhyo dante nidaya janakam padayana patya kridvacha kakushatam etadam hey sadhava sakalaya.